more than that.
I'm not certain. We're working on a video now that was shot on New Year's Eve, and we're going to shoot some more images and then see what happens. We're a little anxious to get back to San Francisco. We have a number of projects that we're doing. We're doing some printing. We're doing some publishing of various magazines. That we have Sleeping Dogs, the magazine. And we're doing a compilation of various people's work, artwork and poetry. We did a tour to the Northwest, and now we're getting work from people here. And I can give people their post office box in San Francisco if anyone wants to submit any work. It's post office box 210-208. San Francisco 94121, and we will return printed copies to whoever sends work. And the format is 8.5 by 11, and there's no censorship.
Now, I'm basically trying to do what Crass is doing in England, I guess, is publishing your own literature and trying to get the people involved with what you're doing. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's real important just to get everyone involved. I mean, people should. It's obviously the system doesn't work, and you're not going to get anything printed in straight press, and you're not going to get to have any change through the regular channels, so you have to figure out other ways. And that's why we've got access to this Xerox machine in San Francisco, so all we have to do is pay for the cost of the paper. So we're printing as much stuff as possible and getting it out there, and it's really good.
Do you feel a little overwhelmed by the size of America? Do you find it very difficult to get the message across? I know touring and just the size of the states and everything like that. It's very difficult for even a small band to make it. Do you feel a little overwhelmed by that?
Yeah, it's big. America's big.
Yeah.
And Americans don't even speak the same language going from place to place. They certainly have a lot of difficulty understanding each other, and it takes a lot of patience to make sure that you're understood and are understanding what people are saying. But we believe that change can happen through the band and through the publishing and through through performing and through making contact with people, through talking. And we wouldn't be doing it if we didn't believe that change could happen this way. And it's overwhelming, yeah. But we're not daunted.
Okay, have you some help from other bands, I guess. Right now, I think you're the only band besides Crucifix on the American version of Crass.
MDC's last single is being put out by Crass.
Uh-huh. So it's basically just you three bands. Do you have any other bands that really haven't been signed to labels that are giving you a hand?
Well, there are a lot of unsigned bands that are, not that are helping us specifically, but we're all working together. In San Francisco, there are some really young bands that are have a strong vision about how they want things changed, and they're very articulate, and their names are Trial, Treason, Atrocity, and PLH. Yeah, these are just some of them, and most of the people are still in high school. They're really young. But they're real active on putting on alternative gigs in the Bay Area, and they have fanzines out, and it's really exciting being involved with people like that. And we find that we are meeting people wherever we've traveled who are involved in doing stuff themselves, like grassroots change. They're involved putting out guerrilla artwork or they're doing something mm-hmm. on their own, and they're doing it independent. And that's what's exciting.
Okay, let's, when I was listening to the record, one thing that sort of amazed me, it's sort of hard to get accepted, I guess, is if you're female in the punk rock scene. I know here in New York, people tend to take groups like that lightly. Do you face any difficulty being female and trying to get your word across to other, fans or listeners?
Well, I don't see it any different from life. I mean, it's tougher being a woman, it's tougher being gay, it's tougher being a third world person in this society. And you're always having to, to fight to a degree. If you're WASP and male, then you have fewer battles to fight than if you're a female of any, any subculture. And I don't know, I've had tremendous support. The band's been very supportive, and I have good, everyone's been supportive. There are battles that are ongoing, and I don't expect them to stop, but I don't have particular problems that I would single out. I mean, any more so than any other woman doing anything in this world.
You said you just came down from Canada recently.
Yeah.
Well, what's happening up there, the Vancouver Five, the Subhumans? Have you been involved with that?
We weren't involved direct. One more thing I wanted to say was it's just too bad that there aren't more women involved in more punk bands. They're too bad they're not more women making more public statements about how they feel about themselves and how they feel about society on every level. I mean, whether they're in bands or not, but especially in bands, especially making themselves visible, it's crucially important. I mean, it's the only way that society is going to change is if the whole ideas of sexism are changed. I mean, that has to be altered. It's really important.
Any songs by the band covering that?
We don't have any specific songs about sexism, but we do have a song about creating ghettos, and I think sexism is a way of reducing women to a ghetto. It's just, you cubbyhole people, you reduce them to non people.
Right.
You make them unimportant, you diffuse their potency, and we have a song about that. It's called Castro Street. It's specifically about the ghetto of Castro Street or Christopher Street, but it's also just an attitude of isolation and elitism. You were asking me about Canada.
Right.
Canada's pretty serious. It's a police state right now, Vancouver. It's no less than a police state. For example, every day in the afternoon, we were in Chinatown a couple of afternoons, and we saw repeatedly in the same block the police would set up roadblocks, and under the pretext of checking cars to see if people were wearing their seatbelts. What they did, in fact, was search every single van that went down that street. And it's really scary up there. They're serious. I mean, they're really...
Do you think you could survive up there as a band instead of San Francisco? Would it be more difficult?
I think that it's funny what kinds of situations breed creativity or breed stimulate people to act, to get angry enough or to feel enough pain that they say, I'm not going to take any more, I want things changed, I'm going to do something to see that things are changed. And right now in Canada, things are that desperate. Right now, things are that desperate in England. We just have a softer life here in America. New York, things are getting more acute. San Francisco's not quite that bad yet.
Right.
But the whole world, I mean, everything is getting more conservative. I mean, there's a whole swing to the right. There's a whole... repressive swing, and it's very scary. Perhaps you'd like to speak with Dirty Dog. He can tell you something of more about his feelings about Canada and maybe about England.
Okay, well, why don't we do that?
I hear you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
All right, good.
That's good.
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed anyway about Canada was, the parallels between there and England. I mean, obviously, it was set up by, you know, by the English. Like the society was more directly founded than, I mean, like in America, you kicked out the English and then sort of went your own way to a certain extent. But there's a particular kind of repressiveness that you see in Canada, which reminded me very much of England, in the way that the way people are treated, you know, like by bureaucrats and, you know, by the police. There's a sort of meanness to it which you don't always see here. I mean, here if people are oppressed, it's appalling, but it's sort of obvious where it's coming from. I mean, it's like, you know, the New York City cop on his beat. You know, mm-hmm. He may be brutal, but you can sort of see him coming a mile off. He's sort of big and fat, and, you know, you just get out of his way or whatever. There it's sort of much more sinister, both in England and Canada. It's more covert. They're trying to set up a nationwide secret police force in Canada, you know, to coordinate activities against, you know, what they see as various terrorist groups. In fact, the man who's supposed to be leading it or heading it up thinks that death squads are a good idea. They're a good way to deal with urban terrorism, you know, and he's not just talking about Central America. And it's, I don't know, it's very disturbing, a very sort of tight, you know, nasty place. And a lot of things, there's all this stuff where that America is involved in, it sort of uses Canada, you know, like there are companies there that are building parts for cruise missiles, and they're also testing them sort of up in the wilds, you know, just sort of out of the way, you know, like out of the way of the American press, if you will, you know. And they're sort of anxious, the Canadians seem anxious to do anything they can to, you know, to serve, you know, the more repressive aspects of American society. And it's interesting to go there and just to see the difference, because it just seems more, you know, more acute, more sort of far advanced than it is here.
It's a little frightening having something like that just so close to home and not many people even know about it.
Right. And it's like, and the thing is, like, you know, the majority of people in Canada live right, you know, close to within like 200 or 300 miles of the border. They're just like the other side, and you know, and we had all kinds of problems sort of going across the border. They were, you know, but that's sort of problems you have with any border. Mm-hmm. I mean, just by definition of making a separation. In fact, I saw there was an article in the paper here the other day about how along the border north of, I guess north of here, really, between here and Canada, the government had sprayed Agent Orange along the border to, you know, to make it clear where it was. And they were doing that, I think, until like 1978, 1980, you know, like years after it had been stopped in Vietnam and years after... you know, they'd found out how dangerous it was. They just, you know, thought they'd like to, you know, to stress where that, you know, we're here and they're there. And then there's the whole thing about how Canada is concerned by, you know, the acid rain that, you know, that's caused by American industries, you know, all along in that section. But I don't know. The countries are, I mean... you know, Canada and America, they're all these things that they're interdependent. But somehow you never even read about Canada. I mean, it's just like, you know, I guess the Queen goes there and she goes to California and it's you know, picturesque and it has, you know, mounties in red coats.
Right, right. You know. Sort of the distorted press view of living in the wilds of Canada.
Right. But I don't know. It's an interesting place to go. So we I don't know. Actually, Vancouver was a good place to play. You know, there are a lot of people, you know, doing stuff in bands. And also, we enjoyed playing in Seattle. There was a lot happening there, and there was a lot of good street art as well. You know, people had just pasted stuff up on the walls.
Okay, what about your impressions of the A-Fest that happened on New Year's here in New York?
It was okay. There were certain sort of logistical problems in that the space was really too small and it wasn't the right kind of space. It ended up being in a small theater, which I guess held maybe about 150 people or something like that. And it was completely packed, you know, people in the aisles. It varied, you know, from band to band. And also the fact that the Discharge were playing the same night, a lot of people left to see them.
Right.
Which wasn't such a bad thing. But the thing is, what something like that needed was a more open space or a more flexible space where, you know, different ideas of performing or different ways of you know, getting together might have been considered. But instead it was just like, you know, here's the stage and here's the, you know, the seat. I mean, there were seats. The place was just like a regular little theater with seats all the way up to the front. So it wasn't really appropriate. I guess it went pretty well. Crucifix played first, and they went down really well, and we played second, and we also got a good response. It inevitably went a bit late, you know, as all these things do, but, you know, trying to get 12 bands on, you know, in one evening isn't easy. And then inevitably there was like, you know, there were some people who at the end of the evening decided to sort of break things. So in that sense, I wasn't that encouraged. I mean, it somewhat degenerated to, you know, just another gig where people were, you know, right on the walls and you know, break things. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what, you know, what really came out of it or not. I mean, I'm sure you get different impressions from, you know, from different people you spoke to. I mean, we enjoyed playing there. And
has any event of this type been done in San Francisco, where your home base is?
No, not really. There tend to be a lot of benefits there, which is one thing I like about it. You know, people will turn out to see bands and support various causes. And, you know, there have been evenings which have had, you know, large numbers of bands and, you know, a variety of bands too, different, you know, playing different types of music, which is good. So, I mean, I didn't feel that this was a sort of great leap beyond that kind of thing. I mean, I'm not sure really what it takes to, you know, to put on something totally new or to, you know, that has a real, you know, offers real hope or real ideas of new directions. But then that's sort of what we're, you know, everyone's trying to discover anyway, like, you know, bit by bit.
Okay, let's move on now, I guess, to some new music. Bad Boy said you just recorded a video. And
yeah, well, in fact, somebody, we didn't know about it, but somebody did a video of our performance at A-Fest, and they're interested to work with us and shoot some more tape to like, really make so that it doesn't end up just being pictures of us, but whereby we can make some real, you know, point or other and you know, get some really strong images on the screen. So, you know, we're going to be doing some work on that this week. And then it seems like there's something of an underground kind of network of videos seems to be gradually forming out of nothing, whereby, you know, people might exchange videos or people could go various places and show stuff and get things connected up that way.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because a video of what you're planning on putting out wouldn't get played on MTV.
No,
in fact.
I don't think so.
So I was, you know, wondering where it would get played.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it would be sort of more informal, but, you know, no less bad for, you know, not bad for that reason. You know, I'm not sure you know, what's really going to happen with video. This is the first time. I mean, we just sort of backed into it, really. We just, but it would be interesting if there was some kind of, you know, grassroots thing could happen there, too. We'll see what happens.
Okay, well, what about the reception in New York? Do you see a lot of people agreeing with what you're trying to say?
I don't know. There doesn't seem to be much of a music scene now here. People, I mean, it's changed a lot from, I mean, the band started, in New York. It was called Arsenal then, but you know, like in 1978 or so, and there was a lot happening there at that time. You know, a lot of different bands were doing stuff, and everyone was you know, was like really helping each other and sharing equipment, and there was a sense of, you know, really getting some stuff done and getting different ideas out. Now it seems that there are very few places to play, really. You know, that it's sort of shut down in a way, and there doesn't seem the same energy or interest in, you know, promoting change as, mm-hmm. as there was. A lot of, you know, people have left, you know, bands that are doing, you know, films or, you know, art of some kind or another, painting maybe. And it seems like I don't know, maybe it's going to build up again to another kind of scene, but right at this moment I don't see very much that's interesting that's really happening. I mean, we really, you know, as far as people liking us is concerned, that, like I say, we got a good response when we played at the A-Fest, but that's, I mean, we've only played once anyway, so...
Okay, let me just ask you, how did you get hooked up with the Crass label? I know it's a little difficult to, you know, even make headways into the English scene. Did you have any connections with the band Crass?
We'd been sending, in fact, an earlier version of the band played with Crass right around the time I was talking about in about 78. Crass came to New York and played a few gigs, and the band played with them then. And we'd been sending them tapes, you know, sort of since then. And, I mean, I happened to know some of them from England, but, you know, eventually they were in a position to, you know, put out records by different people. And they put one song of ours that we'd sent on the tape to them on Bullshit 2, and then decided that they would be prepared to do a single with us. So it's really, you know, it came from just sort of keeping in touch and sending them stuff. And, you know, I mean, more American bands, I think, should send them stuff if only for bullshit. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not sure what percentage they're getting from American bands, but I don't think it's still really that great. I'm sure they'd be interested to, you know, to get some good stuff.
In fact, Stacy from Exit Stencil Music said they're openly looking for bands to send them music uh-huh. to distribute.
So. Yeah, so, you know, if anyone's out there.
Okay, why don't we wrap it up? It's been, I know you're calling all the way from New York, so we'll cut it a little short.
Okay, that's all right.
Anything else you'd like to add, you or Bad Boy?
Not really. I mean, nothing that, you know, I have no prepared statement.
Okay, so you'll be heading back to San Francisco soon. And,
I should maybe just repeat the post office box number if anyone wants to get in touch with us or send us stuff from the magazine. It's P.O. Box 210-208 and San Francisco, California 94121.
Okay. All right, why don't you hold on just a bit, and we'll be right back. I'll be right back to you personally. And
okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, hold on, and we're going to go into a song by Soldier from the band Sleeping Dogs on WUSB Stony Brook.